Cool. Well, I want to thank you guys all for coming. Obviously, you're here for the whole show, so that's great. And I have the pleasure of hosting you first, well, after Jimmy, of course. Right. So I have two things that I want to start off with before I actually get going with the presentation about Barcamp. First, who am I? Well, my name is Chris Messina. I live in San Francisco with Tara in the back, and I sort of, just to give you an idea of where I came from, I moved out to San Francisco about 2.5 years ago, started working for a startup called Civic Space. Moved from that to a project called Spread Firefox, which is a project to spread the Mozilla Firefox browser. After that, I moved on to another startup called Round 2, which turned into Flock. And I was there for 8 or 9 months before going off and starting my own company with Tara called Citizen Agency. So in the meantime of all this stuff going on, this thing called Barcamp happened. So I wanted to find out, actually, who's heard of Barcamp before today? Okay, cool. So there's some new people. Of those who have heard of it, have any of you attended? Good. Okay, so there's a good mix. So, all right, this is good because what I'm going to be talking about is the origins of Barcamp, how it works, and then things that are coming next. So that's sort of the outline of the conversation. So first I want to start with origins. All right, so the inspiration of Barcamp was not actually to go drink in bars, but was actually another camp called Foo Camp. And Foo Camp was put on by a guy named Tim O'Reilly. Tim O'Reilly is a publisher. He publishes lots of books on open source software. You might have heard of him. And anyways, he would have these camps, they've been going on for about 3 or 4 years now, out in Sebastopol, which is where the O'Reilly headquarters are. He would literally invite 200 or so luminaries, people he respected, people who were friends, hence Foo Camp, friends of O'Reilly, and they would literally come out and
sleep over.
And they had a great time. And this is sort of what set the stage for this. Now, one of the alums of Foo Camp was a friend of ours, Todd Tixelic. And he works at Technorati now. There was sort of an interesting thing that happens with Foo Camp, because as Foo Camp was for friends of Tim, it was somewhat exclusive. It was invite only. And that was just the design of the event. That was how he chose to run it. And so last year, around this time, maybe a little bit before that, the invites to Foo Camp were going out. Now, as you can imagine, it's a limited physical space, so it's not infinite in its capacity to hold people. And as you can imagine, over time, friends change and so on. And so there were some friends of Tim that weren't invited back. Now, some of these people were bloggers and were very vocal about the fact that they were disappointed that they weren't invited back. And Tontek actually hadn't received his invite yet. But rather than getting upset about this or angry about it or writing some terrible missive on his blog, he instead approached a couple friends who he told this idea about. This idea of Foo Camp. Well, you know, Tim's got his event. He's an open source guy. There's no reason why we couldn't do our own. And so he told us this maybe 3 weeks before the Foo Camp. And, you know, we were like, that's interesting. But hey, you know, Andy and I, we worked at Flock. We had to go launch our browser. So we were really busy. Ryan was kind of busy. Matt was doing the WordPress thing. And he was busy. So we were like, well, that sounds really interesting. But, you know, whatever. So it wasn't until, you know, maybe 2 weeks later that I started doing research in the Foo Camp. And there was a wiki that they used to organize the event, but it wasn't very well populated. There was stuff about how to get there. There was a few photos, not a whole lot. But it wasn't until Tontek actually showed me his photos from the event that I started to understand how it worked. And it started to dawn on me that, you know, maybe we could actually run this event ourselves because, well, it's actually put on by the participants. It's put on by the attendees. And so as long as we just get people together, it should take care of itself. So on that note, we actually convened a meeting. We were actually in IRC one day. We were like, hey, this sounds like a great idea. Let's meet up and see if we can actually do this. So this is actually the founders meeting at Ritual Roasters in San Francisco. The four of us got together and we're like, so this sounds like a really great idea. Let's figure out how we can do this. Now, the problem, of course, you know, was that we had a very limited time. But these were the tools that we had at our disposal. You know, we could blog about it. We could obviously email folks, set up a mailing list. We were always in IRC and the Barcamp channel and Joito and all those places. We could IM all of our friends. information. And there was this tool that we were also using called Plazes. And Plazes is a sort of interesting place in the story. And of course, a wiki. And once we got the wiki set up, things started actually coming together. People started to believe that it might actually happen. So anyways, what's kind of interesting is that... Oh, and then and of course we had to get a logo. That was kind of Stasi. So what we had was we had 6 days. All right. By the time that meeting at Rich Roasters happened, we had 6 days until boot camp was going to go off. And it was really important to us that we stage bar camp on the same days as boot camp. We talked to a lot of people about how we're going to host the event, how we're going to pull it off. We had no idea what we were doing. But it was really important that it was on the same day to sort of set a message, to sort of say, you know what, it's not about being a crybaby about this, but it's actually about taking some initiative and doing it ourselves. So we had 6 days, we had six people, we had no experience, but with volunteers and a bunch of sponsorships and donations, food was brought in. We had people who came in, donated the Wi-Fi. Plazes actually helped us find our venue, which was the Social Tech's headquarters. Ross Mayfield actually saw Andy Smith on Plazes. I was like, hey, you guys are down the street from me. That's crazy. I hear you're like trying to host this event. Why don't you come over to our new offices and host it here? And so, sure enough, within 3 days, we had an event. We had a venue. And that started to make it really real. So we actually asked people to provide money and food and so forth. We were able to get t-shirts printed as well.
From Giant Robot Printing.
And actually, Pete, where's Pete?
Yep.
Here, is wearing one of the shirts. There you go. And so what ended up happening over this weekend, it started on Friday, went through Sunday, and we were like, we'll have 10 people show up? Well, no, actually, we had 300 people show up. Now, you do the math, that's $850 per person for the entire event, right? And literally, that's about what it cost us, because at the end, we ended up pretty much even. Tenor Audi even threw a party that they paid for that everyone got to go to, free drinks and everything, and a bunch of locals from Palo Alto came that had nothing to do with Barcamp. But, nevertheless, we had a really good time. And, of course, throughout the entire process, everything was documented on the wiki. Not only our process of organizing the event, but during the event itself. Everybody posted their notes. They posted the schedule of talks. And even that part was done ad hoc. That was done at the event itself, and I'm going to talk more about that later. So, anyways, what made BarCamp happen were a couple things. And these were, you know, very much inspired by what Foo Camp had already pioneered and what they actually learned from Open Space, which the bar camp organizers besides Tontek had no idea about. So first, the first rule of bar camp is that you must talk about bar camp. That means you must blog about it. You have to tell your friends about it. It's not a private event. It's not invite only. All right? Second, of course, you blog about it. Third, if you want to present, there's a grid. You write your name in that grid. And talk about what you're going to talk about. Fourth rule.
3 words to introduce yourself.
Basically what we do is we go around the room and we do 3 tags.
That's the fastest
way to get through everybody. You get some idea of who's there, who you might want to talk to. Ruby on Rails counts as 1 word.
Fifth rule. There can be as many presentations as time and facilities allow for.
This is supposed to be about encouraging those hallway conversations to be the central part of the event.
And in that sense,
yes, there are rooms that are dedicated to presentations, but there's no reason why you couldn't go outside,
couldn't go to a restroom, and so on.
Sixth rule, there are no pre-scheduled presentations, no tourists and no PowerPoint. What this means is that you show up, there is no schedule set for the event. You can write down ideas, you can post them to the wiki, you can talk about what you might want to present, but it's really important that the people who actually show up at the event determine what the event's going to be about and what the topics are going to be. Seven, is that presentations will go as long as they have to or until they run into another presentation slot. So what we typically do at BarCamp is presentations are around 45 minutes with 5 minutes to have walk time, talk time, coffee time, break time, whatever. They can vary. You can do 30-minute sessions. You can do speed geeking of 5-minute sessions with demos. You can do hour sessions. It's completely up to the organizers of the event, as well as the participants who are there. If somebody needs longer, have longer. If you want to have a 4-hour hackathon, by all means, go ahead and organize it. Eighth rule.
This is the last one.
This is your first time at bar camp. You must
present. Or,
and this is important, help someone else present. We wanted to create a culture of participation
where everyone actually
gave something to the event. Now, there are some folks who have stage fright or don't want to get up in front of everybody, and that's okay. It's actually a really supportive environment, but if that's not your thing, that's okay. But you do have to help out in some way, and whether that's taking notes and putting them on the wiki or helping someone else present with technical details or what have you, you do have to participate in some way. You can't just sit there as a passive consumer. And that's basically how Barcamp starts. So, I talked about the grid.
Well, this is how the grid basically is designed.
It's designed as literally a wall of paper.
Or stickers or whatever.
People have used all kinds of different things. And literally, once it opens up, and this can open up on a Friday night, the morning of, Saturday, usually there's two grids for Saturday and Sunday.
But there's been Barcamps that
are single days as well. Basically, down the side here, and it's a little hard to see, you have times. All right, so these are half-hour time slots.
Across the top,
you have rooms.
That's as simple as it is.
And throughout the entire event, people are coming up.
They're making, you can see here.
They're making edits. They're combining stuff. They're,
saying, oh, forget it,
I don't want to do that anymore. Or
people are expressing interest.
Yours, like votes and stuff like that, because maybe there was some conflicting stuff. So essentially, this model is how the entire conference is run. So you have no idea what's going to happen. You have no idea, maybe some emergency comes up and, your schedule presents, okay, you can leave, pull it off the wall and come back the next day and present. What's also interesting about this sort of very open model, I mean, obviously it's based on the whole wiki idea, is that oftentimes for two-day Barcamp events, people will be sort of intimidated by this idea about getting up in front of everybody. They'll go home that night or they'll actually camp out at the actual venue, because there's camping involved in Barcamp sometimes. They'll sleep over that night and they'll wake up the next morning completely bummed they didn't present the previous day. And so then they have a chance to actually do so. So it's not predetermined, it's not set in stone. So we really aspire to have a culture of inclusivity where everyone, no matter what their interests are, no matter what their technical prowess is, no matter what their speaking ability, are able to get involved in this. And everyone participates, everyone helps create this culture. And nobody is allowed to just sort of sit there passively and consume what everyone else is working very hard at. And on top of that, we've also worked on ways of allowing people to participate remotely. And whether that's through streaming video, whether it's through Skype, we actually, the first Barcamp, we had an 800 number that people could call into and actually talk to and listen to the presenters as they were giving their speeches or their conversations, I should say. So anybody abroad could actually participate. And that again, documenting all that was really important. So what are some of the consequences of hosting Barcamp? Well, for one thing, after the first Barcamp, we ended up in Wired News. They're obviously interested in all things geeky and tech-like, so they cover us. After that,
the second camp-inspired
event was actually in Ireland. It was called Tech Camp. And they actually had no contact with the original Barcamp organizers. They went off and did their own thing, and that was great. And I didn't actually meet them until December, which is many months later. However, there was another event called EuroOzCon, which is the O'Reilly Open Source Convention in Europe. And there wasn't enough space for some of the community-based open source projects like Drupal. And so rather than, again, complain and moan about it, we decided to stage a Barcamp in Amsterdam. Now, I didn't know anybody in Amsterdam, and the friends of mine from Bright up in Vancouver also didn't know anybody in Amsterdam. But we posted on a wiki, and posted on our blogs,
and sure enough,
someone in Amsterdam showed up and said,
hey,
I know some people here.
I could help organize this Barcamp.
So again,
we did the same thing.
We had it all on the wiki, we put it all out there, we got sponsors, we got a venue donated, and we had 30 people there for the weekend. And what do you know, the BBC shows up and covers it. And now this is sort of an interesting anecdote. Eventually, all this stuff, it's on our wiki, it's on a bigger wiki called Wikipedia. And there's sort of a bitter irony here is that the day that I received notice that my proposed presentation today, this presentation, was accepted, I received notice that the Barcamp entry on Wikipedia was up for deletion, which fortunately was saved given the amount of Barcamps that have happened around the world in the last year. Now, this is actually only a subset. This is about, 20, 25 or so. There's been well over 30, 35 Barcamps in the last 11 months.
Not even a year old yet.
And so
this is just a spattering of things. Now, there's also been some permutations of this idea.
One of them that Tar and I organized is called Wine Camp. Now, it actually is literally a wine camp because we went out to a vineyard in California and we camped out. We had no power, no Wi-Fi, no running water for one night. And that was excruciating. But
no
there was an important aspect of this.
Was that it wasn't just the geeks that had been there at the first bar camp, it was actually mashed up with nonprofits. So there was a very important aspect of this where we didn't want bar camp to just be this insular culture that was only the geeks who had the technology, who had the wherewithal to get stuff together. We wanted to actually spread the stuff that we'd learned to a culture that needs it.
And that was, again, sort of
exemplifying this idea of inclusivity. So we staged wine camp, and sure enough, we had a good solid 50 people there, amazing conversations. We actually built a civics-based website for one of the folks there who does work with off-the-grid children. And just a number of other things have come out of that. In fact, one of the other ones that Tara will be going to is Wine Camp France. That's coming up in September. So if you want to book your ticket now, they're still planning. And that's at, I think it's winecampfrance.com. I think is where there's some information.
But it's also on winecamp.pbwiki.com.
So anyways, what's next, right? So there's already been a good 35, whatever. A lot of our stuff is documented. In fact,
all of our finances for every bar camp is out in the open.
Everybody knows exactly what everything costs, where all the money's coming from, where it's going. That's also been a very important aspect of this. So coming up at the end of August is the one-year anniversary of bar camp. And there was a question at the end of the first bar camp, you know, okay, great. This is probably one of the best conferences I've ever been to because we set the agenda. We did it for ourselves. When's the next one? You know, and of course we had no answer to that. And one of the things that I said was, well, you know, this bar camp was the right event, the right people, the right time. And if there's never another bar camp, that's fine. But of course, as you know, there's been many more. And so rather than focusing on Palo Alto and Silicon Valley, where a lot of this stuff sometimes originates from, Bar Camp Earth is about the worldwide community of bar camps that's happened in the last year. And so what we're actually doing is we're staging as many simultaneous bar camps around the world as possible on the weekend of August 25th and 27th. We've already got 20 locations or so signed up. We've got a huge backbone on the internet too, out of Sudbury, where we're going to be streaming all the video. We've got bar camps showing up. I mean, bar camps have been around the world. I mean, it's been to India, it's been to South Africa, it's been to Europe, it's been all over Canada, Texas, all over the States. And actually now it's just starting to get picked up in Brazil. So in any case, this is sort of the moment for the bar camp community to step up and say, you know, look, here we are. This is what we're able to do with ourselves, with this technology that's being built. It's cheaper than ever to put these kind of things on. And you know what? All the good stuff isn't coming out of Silicon Valley. In fact, Tara and I went over to Bangalore for a bar camp that was held at Yahoo offices. And the people there were so turned on and so inspired and so hungry that, you know, it just kind of made us like shiver a bit and be like, so when are we moving here?
You know?
So anyways, that's coming up at the end of the month. Feel free, the wiki's at barcamp.org. You can go start your own. It's as simple as going in, typing up Camel Case Bar Camp. In fact, there wasn't one in Boston, so you can do Camel Case Bar Camp Boston. You can organize your own. In fact, one of the things that we want to do is allow for people to do similar events, but they don't have to be a full bar camp. So there was an event called Tech Ups, T-E-Q-U-P-S, that happened in Australia that had nothing to do with bar camp. That was almost the same model. And that's a one-night event. So if you don't want to or are unable to do the entire thing, do a smaller event. Just show your solidarity. And there's also mash pits and things like that where you just get together and do sort of an all-day hack fest, whatever it happens to be about. It could be cooking if you wanted to. So anyways, that's all I had. And now I think, I don't know how much more time I have, at all. But I wanted to open it up to conversation, to questions, to comments, ideas, and inspiration.
Yeah.
How do you spell TechUp?
TEQUPS.com. Coming up?
Yeah.
Cool. And 20 points. Oh, and I'll be posting these slides as well on my blog, factoryjoe.com, later. That's Creative Commons by Attribution, so if you want to show it or whatever, feel free.
I've got a question, Chris. How do you... how could you do a bar camp thing at say you're going to a real estate conference, a real like classic boring kind of thing.
Right.
How can you inject a little bit of BarCamp into that and, yeah. and break people out of their mold?
Were you at ETEC?
I was, yeah.
So there's two answers to this question. First, the original BarCamps actually sort of were designed to coincide with pay-for conferences, right? So that the cost of one ticket to an event like ETEC or Web2O is actually the cost that it would take to put on an entire BarCamp, right? So what one person gets, you're offering to hundreds of people, possibly. Now, one of the things that was interesting is that recently, BarCamp San Francisco was actually instigated by the organizers of Supernova, which is an exclusive paid-for conference. I think it's, I don't know, was it $3,000 or something to go?
Yeah.
For
3 days,
I think. Kevin Warbach, the organizer of that, actually contacted Tontek and myself and said, hey, you know, we actually really like the idea of BarCamp. You know, there's a place for the paid-for conferences and for the ones that are really done up, where people do go and they consume a lot of information, but there's also a room for people who are in town, right? And so this is also important. BarCamp is a very local thing. So what we ended up doing was the people from BarCamp in San Francisco, the organizers and so on, basically hosted those people who had come into town as well as their local community. So that's important too. BarCamp's very much about the local community. So anyways, Kevin Warbach talked to us, and we were able to stage BarCamp San Francisco on the weekend after Supernova. And so that gave people who weren't able to afford to go to Supernova, or who didn't want to pay to go to Supernova, an opportunity to actually get together with all the folks who were in town. Now, additionally, at ETEC, there was sort of an upstart organizing. You know, it was an O'Reilly event, so it was sort of an homage, I guess, in a sense, where they actually organized, what they call it? BarCamp ETEC, where literally people who are at ETEC and want to do their own self-organized thing that didn't have the same folks who are on stage talking. Well, there was a foo bar crawl after the first BarCamp, but so they literally staged their own semi, you know, unstructured conference, ad hoc gathering, as I call it, at ETEC itself. The facilities were there, the people were there, and if you didn't want to go hang out in the conference rooms all day, you could actually go organize your own. And again, I mean, this kind of model lends itself to being very lightweight, and anybody can do it themselves.
They did the same thing at OSCON in Portland last week.
Right. It was OSCAMP. Yeah, and that was actually planned beforehand. So more and more, it seems that conference organizers are opening up the ideas of allowing for space to be allocated. Now, you do tend to be sort of on an interesting ground, I think, an interesting playing field. If you go into a conference and there's sort of like the ad hoc area, I don't know. How was it, actually?
I didn't get to go to any of the OSCAMP events. But it seems, from everything I've read, it came about pretty well.
Okay, well, that's awesome. That's great to hear. One thing that we have noticed before is that there tends to be, it's harder to bring interest to it, I guess, while there's all these other sessions going on. So, I don't know, we'll figure it out. But I think it's great that this stuff is actually happening, that there is more of this leveling of the playing field and access so that anybody can come speak. Because there's so much good stuff in the crowd that's being missed. Because, you know, it's all about who you know and so on. And that's just the way that
social constructs have worked for a while.
So TED also did something like this year, where they got a bunch of people to participate with a pre-university session. And I think you're going to start seeing more pre's and posts on paid conferences.
Yeah. I think, you know, again, in as much as they can be a local setting, right? One of the things that's been nice about BarCamp is that in just about every place where a BarCamp has happened, it's galvanized a local community that either didn't exist before or people didn't know existed. And LA is a great example of this, as well as Texas. Like, Texas is going nuts. In fact, they're aiming to do 3 simultaneous bar camps with over 1,000 participants at BarCamp Earth. And I want to show you a photo to give you an idea of how crazy these guys are. This is my buddy William Hurley, who organized BarCamp Austin during South by Southwest, and he actually got this car tricked out like this. So they're doing some crazy stuff. And actually, this is Ross Mayfield of Social Text, and this is actually at the first BarCamp. That's the tent that our buddy Jackson West slept out in. And this is the wiki. Yeah.
How well do you think this sort of model translates outside of geek culture? And could you also explain a bit about what Places is and how?
Yes.
Sure. So I think that it will translate
because it already has. There's been, so besides Wine Camp, right, which was nonprofits and geeks.
So there was sort of that
cross-culture open source stuff anyways. There's been Case Camp, which happened in Toronto, which actually is about marketing. There's
Wolf Camp,
which is a writer's camp for women mostly, well, based on Virginia Woolf. There's Bank Camp being proposed
in Paris, where they want to come up with new economic models. There's actually Gov Camp being planned in Brussels.
I have word that
folks at the top of the UN are interested in doing
something similar.
So I do think actually it translates because there,
as I mentioned before, there's a lot of wisdom out there that's not being captured by the traditional nets. And I think that by allowing people to show up and to talk about things that they're both passionate about and know a lot about, you find out a lot of great things that you normally wouldn't have. So I think that it's totally open. Actually, one of the things that I was going to talk about, but I don't have time for, was all the struggles that we have with the wiki for most people. I mean, it's a very strange idea to hit an edit button on a page and have your things be saved, you know? So this whole rewrite thing is something that needs to be sort of learned over time. And as well, one of the big problems that we had is that people sign up for bar camps. Those folks don't always end up showing up. So there's sort of a fidelity that's lost in being able to write anything on a wiki page.
As well as communicate with folks
after the fact, because it can be anonymous, or people don't put their email addresses and so on. So that's those information to show you. So Barcamp Switzerland, Denver. This one's actually in progress, so I'll show you. It's like a little petri dish, I guess.
If you make them pay, they're more likely to show up.
We have talked about that, but that is a barrier to entry.
Yeah.
You know? Okay, so they have sponsors.
Depends on whether you like type 1 or type 2 errors better.
Yeah, yeah. We have posts, proposed agenda. Okay, so basically you can see here that in Barcamp Texas, these are all the folks who have expressed interest in showing up. Now again, it doesn't mean that any of these folks will show up. It's somewhat useful for the organizers to say, okay, actually people are seeing this, they're telling their friends to come, but right now we've used a system called MollyGuard to do event registration. It's a little bit of a hassle. It's a lot less easy to do than this, but that's what we have. There's also another software called Wild Apricot that's being built by someone who went to Barcamp Toronto. That helps well out with open source and nonprofits organize events and so on. So there's software that's being developed to sort of help these things. But I do think that in general the idea can cross many different gamuts. And there's actually a lot more camps that have happened that I just can't figure out.
You were going to explain about Plazes?
Plazes, I'm
sorry, that's right.
So Plazes is for the privacy paranoid is not something that you want to use. But this is Plazes, it basically sits,
you launch it and it runs.
And what it does is whenever you go to a Wi-Fi network, it looks up the router that you're on, and if it's not already been identified in the system, it's sort of wiki-like again, you can go and you can claim it. And you basically put in the address information for it. And once you've done that, you can pinpoint where other people are. So you can see Ross Mayfield, this is the guy that got us the venue for Barcamp, is actually here at Harvard. Super Amit, the Barcamp New York organizer, is at House 2.0. Stowe Boyd is in Ruston, Virginia. James Walker is in Richmond Hill, and so on. You can open this up. This will give me some information about this place, so I can actually edit this entry. I can find friends within 2 kilometers, 5. Obviously, this is being built by some guys over in Europe. Am I in the way? What?
No. I just logged on.
Oh, okay. So you're not sure. So this is Andy. He's actually since moved to Amsterdam. Tara would be here eventually, I think. But anyway, so
this is what place it is. It's
basically a location awareness tool. So you add your friends and then they can find out where you are and so on. So, what are the questions?
Comments,
ideas, thoughts, stuff?
Do you want to say anything about Brain Jams? So just
yeah, sure. Is it brainjams.com?
Or possibly.
Yeah. Okay. So Brain Jams, is it's a according to this, it's an unconference community. So this is something that a friend of ours, Chris Hewer, has been sort of pioneering, going around
doing these brain jams,
which are much more, I guess, cerebral.
where people get together
and they arrange. You've been to them. How would you describe it?
It's a little more structured, a little more focused outreach using open space technology and various other process techniques to help get people out of their shells.
Yeah, I think it's what it is. It's a little more explicit and intentional. So
it's sort of like the gateway
into the full on WarCamp thing, which, you know, you kind of have to be a little bit, you know, egomaniacal to be able to stand up in front of people that you don't know and say stuff.
WarCamp is a wiki itself. Like,
yeah,
it's not just organized on a wiki or the grid is a wiki. It's a wiki. It's wiki
right.
In the sense philosophically that, you know, that it doesn't happen unless everybody collaborates to make it happen. Because you can't come and just expect, like in that regular conference, to just watch a speaker. You have to actually make it happen.
Yeah.
From serving from the food to the sessions to like the cleanup, everybody.
Tara knows a lot about that. She was like totally amazing at like picking up after us.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's totally true. Like everyone basically
has to pitch in. And it's one of those things, just like Wikipedia. Everybody would say very, you know, easily, oh, that'll never work. And of course, well,
you can keep saying that all you want, but in fact, there's a lot of proof that actually it does. WordCamp is actually going on this weekend, organized by Matt Mulway. It's
for WordPress developers, users,
folks like that. There's actually a Flickr camp coming up as well for all the Flickr people out there. Yeah, so they've actually, so they have all these ideas that have been posted. It's not quite a wiki.
Mashup camp.
Yes, that's another one, yeah. Mashup camp. Oops, maybe it's .com. It was organized by David Berlin and, what's his buddy's name?
I don't know.
Okay.
Well, used to be on
the
wiki.
Marvel.
Oh,
oh yeah, here's a wiki. So
he used to be entirely organized in the wiki.
Yeah. So it's sort of ironic too. I mean, there was this event that started out on the wiki, and then it kind of got unruly with people signing up and so on. So the thing that we have to figure out still with the whole wiki stuff is scale
and scaling. I mean, Wikimania, even as much as it used wikis, didn't do the registration process through wikis.
You know, so it's kind of like a free fall thing that you just kind of have to jump into. It's like, crowdsurfing, not crowdsourcing or anything like that. But, one other thing that's important about this idea of allowing WarCamp to get out there. All right. Recent Changes Camp, of course, it's the wiki
of wiki events,
if that's at all possible. It's an unstructured conference about wikis. And this one last happened in Portland, and I think they're actually trying to organize it up in Quebec again. So totally open, anybody can do it. That's kind of the idea. So I just wanted to mention something about WarCamp as a trademark. Okay. Yes. So this is
no
legal backing, so
don't expect there to be any legal
protection. But that's actually the idea. Just like there's Creative Commons for copyright.
There was
this idea that I put out there called a community mark. Now, Europe has something, but it's entirely different.
The idea
of a community mark is something that was desperately needed when I was at Firefox. And that was figuring out how do we allow the community to take ownership of this mark while still being able to, you know, commercially protect it so that, you know, hackers in Russia can't put out a build of Firefox that has the logo and rips us off and people hate us.
So with an event, it's not such a big deal because we could always just, you know, choose a different name if we needed to, but
this is sort of an experiment. The idea is that a community
mark, unlike a trademark, is not about trade. It's about
identifying a community or an idea. And the community is responsible
for protecting that mark.
Basically, they're the enforcers. And Mozilla has actually seen this time and time again, where somebody's done something nefarious in Mozilla's name, you know, they're like, oh, Firefox is this, you know, oh, well, Firefox is just a bunch of spyware, blah, blah, blah. Well, the community will actually, you know, ascend on that, or descend, whichever, upon that evildoer and tell them how bad they are and, you know, denial of service attack them or whatever it is. Basically, there's some community response that protects the integrity of that mark. I think Wikipedia actually benefits from this a great deal as well.
I don't know
if it's a trademark right now or not, but
regardless,
Mark gave us a community mark so people can actually do things like the Texas mark, for example. Where they essentially take it and they mash it up. It's falling down. Like that. Right? They can do things like that, and that's okay. It's sort of the Creative Commons of trademark. And again, the community will reinforce it if people don't like the way that's being used. And so on. So that's another aspect of this that's put out there. So hey, if someone like takes this and fully commercializes it, that's fine. There's a good chance that the community will never show up. That the community will actually choose to implode the brand and let it die and start something new. And that's the very important aspect of this, that the entire model is fairly disposable and transient, because what's really important for Barcamp is actually the community that happens after it. So it's not just the event itself, but it's what happens ongoing beyond just people showing up and getting a URL. Anything else? Wow, well, I hope you guys are all
and
plan your own bar camp very soon.
So, Chris, I do have one question on your last point.
Yes.
After Bar Camp Boston, which had over 150 people show up, we really felt that sense of community that you described. What kind of tools would you recommend for invigorating that community, keeping it going for the next 6 months to a year for the next event?
That's a really good question. So first of all, it doesn't have to be 6 months a year. It could be, actually, Toronto, if you want to know, like a community that has really gotten around, has changed dramatically. Actually, Tara, do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I used to live in Toronto, and I left there. There was I thought I was the only geek in Toronto, and I went down to San Francisco where finally I'm surrounded with geeks. And then we went up to Toronto again for the Mesh conference, and in the meanwhile. David Crow and what's the other guy?
Oh, Jay?
Yeah, Jay something or other. Anyways, they had ran two bar camps, and they've done this regular thing called Demo Camp, which Chris is showing up there. There's a regular community of 300 people that come out every couple of weeks. And they gather in coffee shops now, and they have all sorts of it's just turned into this huge, huge community, which I now I'm sad that I, didn't stick around Toronto longer to discover that. Yes, no, I wasn't alone, and yes, there is a huge community in Toronto, and that's what BarCamp has done. And we've also seen that happen in Austin. We've seen that happen in New York. Amit Gupta in New York now runs these weekly get-togethers, sort of informal, they can have, they can chat, they can just get together, called Jelly. I've seen this happen in Bangalore, they're getting together on a regular basis. So it's
LA is a really good example of this, because they do these things called geek dinners. Where that community that started out basically organizes these things, they get together, they move around the city, and that continues it onward. So the idea is that a bar camp can sort of be the thing that originally gels the community, and then you can do minor things throughout leading up to whatever your next big event is. So Geek Dinners is one thing. We've started work on this other project that we actually had sort of a pilot in San Francisco called Coworking. And
excuse me?
Oh. Still came up. Wow.
Yeah.
So, co-working, and the actual place that we created in San Francisco is this idea of sort of starting with a workspace and then adding a cafe culture to it, right? Because so much of us in San Francisco, at least, go to cafes, we do our work, we're independents, but the Wi-Fi is not always that great. We kind of feel bad sitting there for 8 hours and buying a coffee. It's not really great for their business. So it's kind of this bad situation on everyone's part. So we took the other approach and said, well, let's actually build a workspace for ourselves and then make it open. Anybody can drop in, anybody can stop by, they can work there, and we'll figure out the business model later. And we're still trying to figure that out. But regardless, the point is that if you want to actually galvanize this community and keep going after the facts, this is another thing. If you're actually working with people day in and day out, in fact, there's people who work at big companies down in the valley who want to get involved in this so that their people can, you know, who live in the city can come to something and work maybe 1 or 2 days a week on this. You can see there's already a bunch of places that are already out there that are pioneering this idea as well. So this is something else that you can do to sort of keep that continuity. Because, you know, BarCamp is like this sort of big radar blip, but it shouldn't be the only blip that's happening in your entire community for a year and then something else happens. So there are things to do to sustain it. And a lot of those ideas aren't even thunk up yet. So, anyways, okay, I think that's it for time. I don't know what the official stop time is, but it's good enough as it is, I think. I think I'll let it sit. And so on. So, anyways, I'm at factoryjoe.com. My blog is really the only thing that's interesting there. And you can see this is my little announcement announcing it. And stuff. So, there you go. And Chris at Citizen Agency, if you want to, .com, if you want to email me. Okay. Done.